Welcome to Leadership Bites. In this podcast, we talk about relevant leadership topics in short, easy bite sizes, giving you food for thought as a leader. Our world has become complex and uncertain. We guide you with the skills you need so that you can do what you do best, lead. In our first season, we covered women's work, and in this season, we cover leadership topics and leadership wisdom in easy bite sizes. This podcast is produced by Dynamique at Work. Please check out our website for more bite-sized learnings. And if you enjoyed this talk, remember to subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. In today's episode, Tim Hill and Rachel Govender talked to Leif Soresson from ACTI. We had an interesting discussion on games as a powerful means of transferring learning, exploring how we can integrate games into leadership programs, and the future of gamification and technology. ACTI is a global provider of game-based workplace learning. Over 300 games have been built by clients and partners, and they have over 250,000 end users from all over the world. You can play some of their leadership and change games through our website. Welcome to Leadership Bites. Today we're talking with Leif Soresson from ACTI. And with Leadership Bites, we talk about relevant leadership topics in short bite-sized pieces. So I'm happy to be able to talk with Leif. And today we're talking about gamification and leadership. And yeah, we'll start with just getting a little bit of an introduction. So Leif, tell me a little bit of what got you started with gamification.
Yeah, how did I? That's a good question. And I have to dig a little bit down in my memories, but I actually came stumbling into it, to be honest. And it was quite fascinating. It was back in 2009. Stumbling into business games. Of course, games has been part of my life. I've been gaming with my kids ever since they were really small and all of that. Yeah. But the business games were in 2010, and it was with another colleague of mine, and who's been playing around in the Copenhagen University setting with organizational development theories, adding them to games, and that's actually where I kind of came in. And already at that point, it was an online game, and I bought myself into the company, and I was kind of the business side of it, and that's where it kind of took off with one game on chains and one game on leadership. And it was like you build one game for a specific theme, and that game was what we went out with ourselves as consultants in that setting, and that kind of spinned off. That was my start of games. And it was a very technical thing. You almost needed to be an engineer to build a game at that time. So things were, but the way that cheating is, it was really fascinating. And maybe a little bit about what was fascinating for me is that I suffer from dyslexia. So I have difficulties in reading and writing. And so playing a game and learning, and I've always been a very eager learner. Like I've been very curious, and I've been very occupied with learning about theories, but having the problems with reading, games suddenly opened up a whole new opportunities to kind of understand theories in a different way for me. And that was, I think, was the first fascinating part of it. And it also took me to, I've been very focused on business before I came into this industry. And then suddenly I became very focused also on the organization development theories and context in general. So that was my journey into it. So,
and we've been talking about it for a while, right?
Mm-hmm. The reason is really, I think that the games that ACTI have this beautiful combination of being great for bringing theory to life, as Leif was saying, being very realistic. The scenarios are things that business people can relate to absolutely immediately. It's very, very grounded in business. And the other thing is it allows the chance for experimentation, for the flight simulator or laboratory idea of trying things out, failing, trying again, which is so, so crucial. And I know Leif often says that, you know, the real senior leaders that he works with are the ones who just jump in and don't try things out enough. And that's sometimes a fantastic learning for them as well, to really realize that you have to stop, You have to see what kind of response you get from your actions and then sort of course correct as you go along.
Yeah.
So one thing I wanted to ask Life is that there's a quote from Bob Johansson from the Institute for the Future that we've all heard of. And he says gamification is going to be the most powerful learning medium in history. And when he says history, he means the history of the world, the history of mankind. And I'm wondering, Life, do you agree with that? That's quite a dramatic phrase of this, but it's something that he said many times.
I've been thinking about if I agree, and I do agree in some of his underlying statements. Like he says that the powerful thing about games is that you can actually create an environment for people to do the practicing. And to that extent, I certainly agree with him that it's really a powerful tool. And to me, it's the most powerful and most important tool. But I'm not sure I agree that it's that is the most changing and powerful tool in the world because I think it's relying on technology. So I actually like to think of technology as the most powerful tool that is actually leverage or making it possible for us who's interested in games to build those games on top of the technology. So to me, it might be more the technology than the actual games, but I'm just very focused and interested in the game part and believe that is changing a lot in the learning industry in general speaking. But I think it's provocative, and I really like the fact that he's putting so much into it and giving it that status in the world. I'm almost falling in love with him just by reading that.
Just from that comment. It's good for the business.
I mean, it couldn't have been said better by anybody else. So I really think I owe him a lot for that. So yes, I agree to some extent. And I also like to complicate it a little bit more.
Sure. And I think the real key there is he's encouraging all of us to be agile in our thinking and action. That's really what it is with the idea of gamification, is trying things out. And as he also says, getting killed without dying, if you think about it.
And that's the gaming element that I think he also is very fascinated about. And since he comes out of the war industry, not the war, but he works a lot with the
army.
So he has that mindset, and I think that's what we can use it for. Is actually like you said before, you managers and leaders need to practice, and we are in a field where it's difficult to practice because. We're discussing behavioral science and we are trying to teach you theories about, he's talking about the VUCA world, but we talk about change or leadership models that we want our organization to be working accordingly to, or the strategy. And games actually provide that fundament for practice closely to a real life setting. And that makes the transferring of the learnings easy for people who's learning something. And that element of games is super powerful and probably the most changing factor in learning also, if you ask me. The way to create an environment that you can relate to makes it easy for you to actually do something different in the real world.
Yeah, and I really like it because he also talks about, of course, within the army and the military, being able to try certain things. And I was thinking about it for leadership. It's nice to be able to try a few things in a safe environment that they could say, okay, how does this work? What does it feel like? What's natural to me? And then be able to try, because we talk about heat experiences in leadership, and it's really, we learn the most through making mistakes, whereas most companies in real life, you're not really allowed to or able to make the mistakes. So I have a bit of a segue question on that, because I've been thinking, and I saw that you had a gender quiz, which I wasn't able to join, unfortunately. But I was quite curious on, have you noticed, for example, differences with the gender, race, or even the age pattern in gamification and leadership? Or different leaders? Have you noticed like a pattern or a trend in different ages or different gender?
That question always tricks me a little bit, because it's always, and it comes out of our way of understanding culture in a broad perspective of the earth. Yeah. And when I look at our games, the fun thing is that I don't see any difference. I wish I could say, and our games has been, they're being played so much, so I could actually look at how does it look like in one end of the world and in the other one. But the perception of games in general is the same. They all like it. They all have the same experience. But if you nail it down or drill it down to specific theories, you see a big difference in how they play in one end of the world than they do in the other end of the world.
And that's
one of the other powerful things that I think should be mentioned about games, is that you can actually, you get that type of statistics out of the game. So it gives you, as the L&D department or the HR department, are actually able to drill a lot of information out of playing games in the company.
Mm.
But what we see most, I have one great example that we did a study on a European playing the same game as a group from the US.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked only at how people react towards a change that are being imposed on them. So we looked specifically on resistant levels. And one of the resistant levels that comes from Rick Mauer is gaining trust in the organization. And some of the choices in the games reflect trying to create trust, and this game has been played thousands and thousands of times, and in the US it was like a small sample, so we could actually see that the people from the US, same level in the organizations, quite high up in the organization, they did not use the trust, they didn't try to create trust in the organization. But while looking at the European games played, they all try to gain trust, because you have this situation where you're meant to look at the situation and try to create some trust among the employees in the game. So looking at the data, specific data in each game, you can actually see the difference on culture. I did not get the chance to have interviews with why, but I could see these things were different cultural wise.
So
playing games, how they perceive games, you see no difference. They all understand the same games, but what they choose is different depending on the organization, country wise. I haven't looked at it gender wise. It's so unfashionable to talk about gender. So we are actually taking that out of our system.
That's interesting.
Before we had like you recruit, it's a little bit of a fun gender story, but we are at the company very aware of gender aspects in the company. So we try to comply, because we also believe that's how we should be in the world. And then we discovered that our games actually had a female and male structure. So you had to choose, when you develop and design a game, you choose a person, and then you had to give that person a gender. And we actually had to take that out, because we suddenly felt that we were very oldish, and we got some criticism from some of the schools that were playing the games, that why do I need to put a gender on people that I meet in the game? And we just had the reflections, why are we having that? And we had not had pushbacks after we took it out, but now you don't choose a gender in the game anymore. Mm-hmm. So gender is taken out of the games.
Well, that's interesting. I do find it great that you can actually extract a lot of data and see what the data says, especially when you have different cultural experiences.
Yeah, and I can echo Life's experience as well. I mean, the project I did last year with YouLife was basically also Europe and the US, but a different company. And the results were basically the same as well. So again, I'm not talking about a massive statistical sample, but it's not about me or you proving that we're right. It's about opening the conversation with the organizations in question to talk about, are there ways of being more effective in terms of leadership and teamwork? Are there things that are not on our radar, that are in our blind spot, be it in the US or, for that matter, in Europe, so to speak? And that's the beauty of it. It's the conversation doors that are opened. It's really the point.
Quite interesting to see how they could shape our thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And we since people are also building games on our system, we don't build games anymore unless it has a broader perspective when we think we need this game. It's actually built by all of you guys who's building the games. And we can also see that there is a shift in length of games. There is a shift in theory in games. There is a shift in what type of themes you want to put into it, business targets. And we just think that going forward, when a lot more games is going to be built, we'll be able to foresee a lot more about what is actually going out in the real world, which will be reflecting something that we as a small company never would be able to reflect, because suddenly we get input from people developing games instead of us being the ones developing games on the world. So, going forward, we will be much more monitoring what is actually happening in terms of themes out there, which is important. And speaking about data, there are two levels of data which is interesting to look at. One data level is the industry specific data. So imagining a finance institution can measure themselves on a specific game against the general industry. So I can be playing a game on leadership development using the same theory. Why do we deviate? So that's like an L&D data going up to the level of how do we design new programs, and you guys as a consultant firm guiding companies are doing the same thing. You have the need for the same kind of information in order to actually be advising them in the right direction. But on another level, which is the playing level, where if I've been playing a game, in the end of the game, you're getting a profile on how did you actually do this game? And then you can measure that profile against your colleagues or against your industry or against your next door neighbor or whoever you want to compare that with. And that's always an intrinsic motivational factor for people playing games, that it actually says something about you that you can measure against others. So those two levels of data in the games are crucially important for the success of a game, and also for creating the value, both for the learner, but also for the company and organization in general. So
yeah, so you just answered my next question about the advantages.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely one of them is that we can, and I think the advantages of ACTI in general is the data section. We are quite strong on data and we are being better and better. We also have what we call the host view or facilitation view, where if you use our game, you can show live data on people who's playing, and you can even drill that down to specific theories. So if a game contains 5 theories, you can choose to look at John Cotter and see the profile from people playing on John Cotter. And then you can start discussing with the group on, yeah, but why does team A has a different profile than team B? What type of choices are they making? So you can open up much more deeper discussions like Tim is putting forward in terms of learning, and you can do it on live data. And that's one of the, I think one of the things that we are strong at. And then the other one is that you can play asynchronously in time. Mm-hmm. Which is also open up the opportunity for having bit sizes learning that you can actually, any consultant should send out something that you do prior or post a live session that actually or revisit the learnings that you are trying to give people or prepare them for something, because games are great at doing that, because you can still have people competing without being together, because they can play asynchronously. So if I have 10 minutes while I'm waiting for my partner at the bus station or with the car, I can click on the link and play the game. And then I still create my profile. I still get some value back. And then it allows the consultant to have the discussion. So I think that's what games can do in a different way than if you send me a file or read this or look at this video. It's a different concept here. You're actually engaging in a way, and you might even be directly competing against colleagues that you really want to beat.
Yeah.
In leadership. Yes. And it's also very interesting to get colleagues who work together playing together in the team challenge, that is groups of say 3 or 4, something like that, having a discussion about what choice to make. And then of course, often the same behavioral patterns will come out in the game as in, well, let's say daily life. So that's a beautiful thing as well. Yeah, and you've got the immediate data and the sort of longitudinal data, as they call it, the longer term data as well, which is really fantastic to work with. I was just wondering, Life, because you were perhaps the last point or so here, you were talking a bit about the future, you were talking about games being created by, if you like, the network, by the consultants, by people who run these games, facilitate these games. Are there any other changes that you see coming also on the technological front? I mean, is there anything that you're interested in, or your colleagues, your network are interested in, around virtual reality, augmented reality, taking that further as well? Are there any just thoughts in your mind on that topic?
I have like a tons of I'm a person who wakes up in the morning and have those type of thoughts. I'm yes. getting out of the shower. My wife and kids have very often asked me where on the planet are you, and that's the planet I'm at.
Yes.
So yeah, but going back, that's what I think of. So but if I should say it in short and direct, I think both technologies, augmented and virtual reality, has a huge future also in learning. I think it's a little bit premature to think of it as a concept that we will add in. It's probably going to be a year or two before we have something, but we have something coming on video, because I think video is going to be a new big thing, because we all know how to distribute videos and so on. So videos as part of gaming and in part of game building will be a huge thing in the future. But in terms of machine learning, I think machine learning is probably going to go faster than we think, because we're going to add in machine learning in terms of when we discuss statistics, when we discuss game design. Machine learning can help us in easily figuring out what could be a great way to solve my problem, or a great game to solve my problem. So we are right now considering having a, we already did some trial, and we're probably going to add it on in the next year. Can you imagine that you have a problem in the organization? So your client comes and approach you and say, we are struggling with getting our first line managers to understand the new strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You add into ACTI new strategy, and then it comes up 100 different types of answers you could have to that specific issue, and then you can select the ones you think is relevant, and then you can organize them into chapter, and within 10 minutes you have a game that others have been using for the same purpose. You just describe the context, so suddenly you have your own game targeting your specific client with your specific needs in a much more fast way. That's where machine learning is going to take us within the next year. So I believe very strongly in machine learning first, and secondly in VR and or an augmented reality. I should probably say that one of the things we've learned from being a tech company in learning is that you cannot have too much tech. The world is moving in a certain pace, and we had struggles with people just figuring out to play games. And I think putting on goggles and putting on more technology is too much for people right now. You can have it in one-to-one conversations, or to practice coaching, or practice a conversation. But if you want it a little more complex than that, I think it's too early, still too early.
Sure.
And I might sound like a dinosaur here. I'm really sorry if I do, but...
I think it'd be difficult for you to sound like a dinosaur, but certainly I take your point about the machine learning and the notion of using that to develop games super fast. I think that's really, really interesting, and something I think, Rachel, we can also look at developing a game in the future, as we talked about yesterday, I believe. So yeah.
I have to say, personally, having played games as well, even the Change game that you had, it was really nice to be able to work with it and very interactive. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it integrates into leadership programs, and how we can learn from the new technology coming down the line. Who knows what could happen, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a huge future in front of us. But the interacting part, not to open up a total new theme in this conversation, but I have like a code of conduct for myself when I'm doing speeches. Sometimes I get invited. I don't do any consultant work. We don't do that at the company anymore at all. We don't sell hours. So nobody can call us and say, can you come and do this program? We don't do programs. Sometimes I'm fortunate enough to have people wanting to hear what I think about games and the experience I have in games. And I simply do that for free, because I just love talking about the planet I like to be on, right? But one of the things I've the code of conduct or the things that I always do is I don't do speeches. I want people to engage in the product while we speak, and the reason is that you just simply understand much more from trying it than from talking about it. So so if people are willing to go in and do a free game, they immediately understand what you're talking about, Rachel, when you say interact, because there is a huge difference in thinking about interacting and then actually interacting with something. Yeah. And games are so vivid in terms of what type of game are we discussing that you need to actually do the game in order to understand that specific game framework. So I totally agree. And it's so much more fun for everyone. I never heard anyone saying, yeah, but I clicked and I didn't want to move on, or it was so boring. I never hear that. I hear a lot about PowerPoints being bored or the person at the stage being bored, but never if you have them engaged. So
yeah. So the message is just try a game. We have a few on our website as well that link to yours, and to try it and see what it's like. And I have to say, I find it very addictive. I love games anyway. And when I found that there's leadership games, it makes me wanting to be more interactive with the game.
Yes, get your dopamine kick from the mouse click. That's the bottom line.
And as you know, you get the best feedback from the workshops that you're doing with when you have that interaction level, and that's also what you're saying. So if anybody's listening, whoever is listening to this talk, please click the link and go and try the game and contact Dynamic at Work and get them going.
Okay, thank you for being part of the
Thanks a lot again, Life. It's always great to talk.
Make sure to visit our website dynamicatwork.com for more resources and information. Dynamic at Work. We connect and grow leaders.